Hello and welcome to Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else, a series of conversations with innovative educators at colleges and universities across the country. I'm Elizabeth Yost-Hammer, Director of the Center for the Advancement of Teaching at Xavier University of Louisiana. And now, let's talk about teaching, learning, and everything else. Hello. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Marcia Rossi from Tuskegee University. She received her PhD in experimental psychology with an emphasis on learning and behavior analysis from Auburn University. She collaborates with faculty in aerospace science engineering on research projects relating to human factors in flight training and visualization training. She teaches introduction psychology, theories of learning, human factors psychology, and social psychology, among other courses. And she is responsible for installing the PsyChi chapter at Tuskegee University, which is the National Honor Society in psychology, and she still serves as its advisor. Recently, Dr. Rossi has written a chapter entitled Helping Students with Their Personal Problems, Should I Help and How? Welcome, Dr. Rossi.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to focus today on this chapter. I think it's such an important issue, dealing with student problems and student issues, and it's one that we usually in graduate school don't get trained on at all. And I thought we could start by just asking you, how did you get interested in this topic?
Well, that's a good question. I guess it's arisen out of basically my work here at Tuskegee University and being a faculty member and working with students and just the kinds of problems that they have and tending to come to me and talk to them. I thought there might be some need for that, and then was requested by Dr. Buskus to write a chapter on that after a discussion he and I had. So.
Oh, okay. Was there anything in a particular incident that you could share with us that, of course, being anonymous, gave you some expertise in this area or interest in this area to get to the point to write a chapter?
Well, I'm not sure that I can think of a particular incident. I think it's just been a number of incidents and the way that I have reacted to them and number of discussions that I had with him that he thought I would be a good person to write a chapter on this.
Okay, very good. As a broad question to, get us into the meat of your chapter is, when should faculty get involved with student personal problems?
Okay, so that's the big question. So. I think it depends. There's a lot of factors that go into that, and it depends upon what you mean by personal problems. So one of the things I talk about in the chapter is the different kinds of problems that students might have, including academic problems, relationship problems such as breaking up with a boyfriend or girlfriend or having problems with their roommates or, parents, things like that. Of course, the academic problems, having financial problems, which is increasingly a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays we're having more and more students that have health-related kinds of issues. And so when the issue of, when should you get involved kind of depends to some extent on what kind of a problem you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the first things to do is try to identify the kind of a problem.
Thank you for clarifying those kind of different categories as you see them. What kind of why would the type of problem be a issue with whether you get involved or not? How do you see that as leading into that?
Well, if it's, let's say you're an academic advisor and a student comes to you with an academic problem, then of course it's your responsibility to deal with that. And
and
different people have different ideas about to the extent that they should go dealing with problems, so that's another issue as well. But there's certain responsibilities we have. And so if you're an academic advisor and a student has an academic problem, then it's definitely your responsibility. But sometimes students come to their academic advisor for other problems, and that's what often is the case as well, that they will come to a professor or their academic advisor and they don't know who else to turn to. And so then in terms of getting involved, there's certain things that you might go through to decide how involved you should be.
Okay. Any besides the type of problem, any other things for that big question about when to get involved?
Well, again, it kind of depends upon what kind of problem it is and what you see is how you can help. I mean, one of the first things that I say is to first try to figure out the nature of the problem. Mm-hmm. And even when sometimes a student may come to you and it sounds like it's an academic problem, then it turns out that maybe they might come to you and say, well, should I drop this class? And you start talking about that. And then you get into a little bit more of a discussion about why they're having trouble, and it turns out that maybe you have an idea they have a learning disability. Mm-hmm. So now you need to get involved as their advisor, because you need to say, okay, you know, have you had this kind of problem before? Do you have the same kind of problem in your other classes? What are some similar classes? You know, you try to identify what other courses they are having problems in, and see if you can see some sort of a pattern. And if you see that they're having problems in certain kinds of courses, then you can make referrals to try to address that. And if you determine it's a learning disability, they need to be referred to get, you know, tested so they can get special services.
I think one thing that, when I was reading your chapter, one thing that I find so intriguing about this topic anyways is those more gray area type problems, you know,
right.
Students. And I also wonder if there are gender issues here, you know, as a female faculty member. Early on in my teaching career, you know, when I was younger, I would get students, female students, coming to me with, you know, more of the personal problems, relationship problems, and I really struggled with what's my role here. You know,
right.
I don't want to do any damage. I'm not trained in dealing with those types of problems. So I wonder if you could, talk me through a scenario like that in terms of like you just did with the academic example.
Okay. Well, I think the first thing I try to do is just listen to them and ask them questions and not judgmental questions. One of the guidelines I have in my chapter is to be open and non-judgmental and listen to determine the nature of the problem. And so if they come to you and they're talking about their particular problem, try to see where they're coming from. Try to understand what specifically is the problem. And you're right, you know, as a female and then as a psychologist,
mm-hmm.
I tend to get a lot of students that come to me, you
mm-hmm.
know, so they come with female problems as well as coming as a psychology professor, because they think that they can talk to a psychology professor a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be in psychology. Sometimes they come to others that they just feel they can trust. And so, you know, the first thing to do is just take some time and listen to the student and try to be empathic and hear what they're having to say. And so, you know, students have come with pregnancy issues and different
mm-hmm.
kinds of concerns like that. And you know, it's not that you're necessarily trying to advise them about matters that you don't feel you're qualified to advise, but really just kind of listen to them, because they really just sometimes need another adult that they can trust. And here they are, you know, most of them are away from home, maybe don't have as much contact with family members, or maybe it's something they don't feel they can talk to a family member about. And so here they are bringing it to you. So that's a situation where, you know, it's a lot for them to actually come to you and open up. And so you really need to be careful about how you just listen to that and try to identify what they're saying and what the actual issue is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In a situation like that, let me reverse the question a bit. And when is a time that you would recommend not helping? You know, again, not in the academic realm, but in a more personal realm.
Right. Well, it depends on what you do to help. Again, there's several things that you can do to help. And one of the first things you can do is to make referrals. And
mm-hmm.
so if you're listening and, you know, to me that's not really helping so much. If you're just listening and then you're making a referral, I mean, I think different people have different boundaries about where they think they should help and where they shouldn't help. So I think it's everybody's responsibility when a student comes to you that you should help in the sense of, you know, talking to them and listening to them and trying to hear what they have to say. If you don't personally feel comfortable in going, you know, much beyond that, that might be your own particular issue and your own particular boundary at which you want to draw the line. But at least everybody should be, I think, willing to listen to what the student has to say and to try to understand their particular problem. And then in the situations like you're talking about that are more serious, you know, if it's something that's definitely a serious issue, then you may need to make a referral to them if they're having depression or
mm-hmm.
suicidal tendencies or medical kinds of issues. Then, you know, the best thing to do is to try to refer them to the appropriate resource.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, it seems like potentially, I'm a psychologist as well, and so potentially psychologists are more aware of boundary issues than other people, faculty in other disciplines. It seems like sometimes I talk to them and I feel like, oh, I want to be a little gentle with a student, or, you know, I know my limitations maybe more than other faculty do.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned boundaries, and I wonder if your boundaries have changed over time, your personal boundaries. Have you noticed them loosening or tightening, or has it changed over time in your teaching?
Good question. I don't know. We all have different constraints. So one boundary is how much time do you have to spend, and that's a reality. And a lot of faculty are very busy, and I've been serving as department head for the past year, so that's constrained my time more. And so that, you know, that's the main boundary issue I have is really a matter of time. And I will, you know, definitely take time to talk to the student and try to help them, but may not be able to sit in my office and talk to them day after day after day, you know, if they keep coming back. But in terms of other kinds of boundaries, I don't really know that I've had any really change in that. And if it does take talking to a student time and time again, then I will.
Mm-hmm.
And so I haven't really had a big change in that, although sometimes, I guess, over time, you get better at recognizing the nature of the problem, you know, at an earlier stage in the conversation. And so when they come to you, now you've, you know, you can kind of get to the core of it a little bit sooner.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a difference.
Mm-hmm. At any time, because that's, you know, interesting to hear you say, you know, okay, multiple times, working with students multiple times on problems and kind of helping them. Is it, have you ever experienced any kind of conflict of interest with that in terms of your administration or, you know, deans or department chairs feeling like you were too involved or that it was a topic that a faculty member shouldn't have gotten involved in? Have you ever had any of those kind of situations?
I've never had any of that, and I don't know if it's just the way that I tend to interact with the students or what it is exactly, but I personally have not ever had any kind of issue with that.
Okay.
And in fact, you know, with students sometimes in regard to the question right before this one, there will be times when I'll talk to a student and I'll say, we come to some sort of a conclusion, I'll say, let me know next week how it goes. You know, I might ask them to come back to me. And if I, let's say they're not even in my class, but they're, you know, on campus or they're an advisee, you know, I may run into them and say, well, how did that go? Come by and see me. And almost invariably they come by and they let me know if I ask them to.
Do you feel like it's, to some degree, your reputation as an empathetic listener is out there, and do you think that's increased the number of students who've come to you, or do you think it's just a personality variable that you would have no matter what?
I don't know that I can really answer that, but I mean, I think generally, you know, like you said, I am the advisor for PsyChi, and now I'm the department head, and so I'm doing a lot of activities in the department, so a lot of the students, you know to come to me with problems, and so I don't know, you know, which variable you want to attribute it to.
Okay. I want to come back to the guidelines in your chapter in just a moment, because I think those are really interesting. But before we do that, speaking specifically about teaching, so your time in the classroom, do you think the empathy you've shown students, the help in writing this chapter and thinking about this, change any of the way you relate to students in the classroom or change your teaching dynamic in any way?
I don't really think it's changed it. I think I'm more aware of what I've been doing, and maybe that's part of it. And maybe I feel an extra responsibility, not just because of the chapter, but just over time I've developed maybe more of an extra sense of responsibility. But
And you
know,
think that's
maybe it's being in one institution for a good bit of time that you just kind of, you know your role and know where you fit in. I don't really know.
Okay. And just for listeners, how long have you been at Tuskegee? I don't think I mentioned that.
I think it's about 17 years.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, I just wondered if it would affect rapport and, you know, I mean, just, I think those kind of empathetic responses can, you know, help those kind of things. What about policies or class policies or class management or those kind of things? Do you think being more aware of students as whole people and who are experiencing problems too have influenced any of those over time?
Well, I think, yeah, in that sense, for example, you know, I have policies on my syllabus about late assignments and things, and one of my policies, when I first started teaching, one of my policies was that, you know, things really couldn't be late if they were maybe a day late. And I started having problems with, well, here this student had this death in the family, and this student had this serious, you know, situation. And so I came to a conclusion maybe 5 years ago or 6 or 7 years ago that actually talking to a more seasoned faculty member than I at that time who had a policy that they had enacted, and I started doing that. And now I try to recommend that to all the faculty in my department that, you know, students sometimes do have legitimate reasons for being late, and there are a lot of personal kinds of problems that get in the way. And, you know, maybe you don't want to just say, okay, everything can be late, but you might have a penalty. And my policy has changed to now where it is that they can be up to a week late, but they'll have a letter grade deduction within that week.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I don't take it at all. So, you know, I think, yes, you're right. You know, over time, maybe I have changed in terms of my classroom policies. I'm a little bit more aware for today, you know, for example, today, we're aware of the election. You know, that played into that, you know, that everybody was excited about the situation.
Yeah.
And so that changed what happened in class today.
Yeah.
So those things, you know, definitely do come into play in the classroom as well.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a respect issue as well, you know, respecting that students have this life and that they are experiencing things, and, you know, that
right.
can play out in the classroom.
I mean, I think that's definitely the case. I think the era of the student is being, you know, coming from a family where they're generally have all their expenses taken care of, and, you know, we have a lot of non-traditional students that are working sometimes one and two jobs,
mm-hmm.
sometimes students with families, and, you know, you just, like you said, it's a matter of respect to realize that they have other issues going on, and you have to meet them halfway.
Mm-hmm. Do you get, are there any of your colleagues that give you feedback on that as you're too soft, that's not the way to go in the real world, people aren't going to?
Yeah, I get some of that. You're right. I do have some colleagues that think that, and we have discussions within the department as well as externally, not necessarily people attacking me personally about
mm-hmm.
my views, but just in general discussions come up on campus about, you know, what is appropriate and what's inappropriate, and some folks feel like that's, you know, that we're being too lenient in some cases, and others, especially the younger faculty, realize that students today are a different mindset and they have a different set of responsibilities as well, so
mm-hmm.
you have to, you know, recognize that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, you know, my school is in New Orleans, and so when we evacuated for Katrina and came back that semester, I really felt a difference in my teaching and my dealing with student problems then, you know, because
right.
I felt, and it was, you used the word earlier as we were talking, that the responsibility, you know, I felt a responsibility for these students who chose to come back, and you know, I really started looking at my policies differently and students differently as a result of that.
Oh, yes. And we had a number of students come to Tuskegee from there. And,
thank you.
And that was absorbed. And we, you know, we took them in late in the semester, and the faculty was instructed to work with them. And,
mm-hmm.
and so we did.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thanks for doing that. You mentioned in your chapter you have three guidelines for helping students deal with personal problems. And you mentioned the first one, which is be open, non-judgmental, listen, and determine the nature of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you comment on guideline number two, which is know the appropriate campus and community resources to make referrals.
Okay. And, I can. And let me just go back, if you don't mind,
mm-hmm.
to that first guideline. One of the things that sometimes, I don't know if this came out earlier when we were talking, but sometimes when a student comes to you with a particular problem, it may not be clear. I mentioned it in the context of learning disabilities, but sometimes they may come to you and it seems like the problem is one particular kind of a problem and really it's something else. And so, you know, that's where asking them questions and listening to them carefully really helps you kind of sort out the exact nature of the problem. And so that's an important thing, not just to take it at face value. When they say to you, that's the point I'm trying to make, is not take it at face value. When they say, I'm having this particular problem, to kind of go into depth, just take a few minutes. It only takes 5 minutes, really, to get them to talk about things and figure out exactly the nature of it. And so once you do that, then you're better able to make the referrals. So getting to the second, you know, guideline, if it is an academic issue, there are tutorials on campus, for example. Most schools do have an office for student support services where they can go for help getting diagnosed with learning disabilities and getting special kinds of treatments and getting accommodations so that the faculty are required to give them accommodations.
Mm-hmm.
There's community resources that you need to know about. You know, most campuses have a campus counseling center. If they don't, there's possibly some community service agency that can help them with counseling. So knowing the kinds of resources that you have available, you know, to help the students is an important thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As you're saying that, I'm realizing that would be a great thing for new faculty orientation, you know, to include in there, especially people who are new to the community and
right.
don't really know the resources that are there.
You're exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then the third guideline, recognize that there are limits on how much you can help.
Right. That's, I think, where a lot of people, you know, think, okay, you know, I've done what I can, what else can I do? And everybody has to have their own limit, and that's something that everybody has to determine for themselves. And, you know, my feel is that, you know, over time you kind of figure that out. And if you find that you're overwhelmed by student problems, you know, you may have to draw the line a little sooner. But, you know, in general, I think folks should try to help the students and try to listen to them and try to make the referrals and do what they can. And then at least you feel like you've done what you needed to do and that you've taken the time to help them try to solve the problem. And, but everybody does have a limit. And there are times when a student will just want to come back and use you as a, you know, a friend or a counselor mm-hmm. and keep talking to you over and over. And at some point you may have to gently say, you know, you need to go on to a therapist. I can't help you anymore with this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are there other, you know, I'm thinking about faculty, especially newer faculty, who might be struggling with this issue. What are some of the ethical pitfalls that might come up to this, or can you think of any ethical pitfalls or downsides, you know, that faculty should watch out for?
Well, you don't want to get into a situation of counseling somebody and trying to provide therapy advice or counseling advice and not be qualified to do so. And so that's an ethical issue. And, of course, if you try to assume that responsibility, then, you know, that's an ethical issue and the student follows your advice and, you know, ends up hurting themselves or getting hurt or something. So
can you give an example of what you mean by that, like what that might look like?
Well, if someone comes to you and it seems that they have a mental illness, for example, and maybe they're suicidal,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you continue to try to handle it yourself and you're not qualified and you're not providing them the resources and the services that they truly need, then,
mm-hmm.
you know, something may happen if that does. And obviously
mm-hmm.
that's an ethical issue.
For any, and I don't know if you've dealt with anything that severe, like suicidal ideation or, you know, that sort of thing, but for you know, but that does happen on campuses,
mm-hmm.
and faculty do have to deal with that. And for something that severe, have you ever documented the help you've given or the conversations or touch base with your chair about it so that other people know what's going on? Or
I don't even know. I'm trying to think back. We have not had many of those kinds of cases, and I don't know that I've ever had a case here
okay.
with a student that was suicidal. I mean, I do know it's, you know, happens at other
mm-hmm.
Institutions, and I'm sure it has happened here. Which I just don't know of any particular cases
mm-hmm.
of students coming to me, but maybe back, you know, a number of years ago, I had folks that were very depressed and had referred them, you
mm-hmm.
know, for counseling and so on, and so
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of any other kind of issue that...
I'm just thinking for new faculty who might be, you know, trying to establish those their own ethical boundaries for themselves and figuring out their role, getting their own, you know, getting mentoring on this on their own, let their department chair know what's going on, might just kind of cover them a little bit, make them
mm-hmm.
feel more comfortable.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think so. And, I mean, I think that's an appropriate place for a workshop on a faculty to recognize. We were talking internally on campus about this, that faculty need to be more aware of the kinds of, you know, mental illness and mental health issues that are occurring. And,
mm-hmm.
and of course, you know, the cases of the shootings and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to recognize students that might be a threat to themselves or someone else is an important
mm-hmm.
Skill that people need to have. And so I think that's definitely a worthwhile kind of a thing to have a workshop on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's so out of the realm of our training for teaching.
Exactly.
As we wrap up here, I wonder if there's any last piece of advice you would want to offer a faculty member at any stage that's dealing with this issue.
Well, I guess I'd like to say that, you know, all faculty go through these kinds of things, and one of the things I would like to people to keep in mind is do keep in mind that the student is coming to you because in some way they trust you to try to help them, and so to recognize that and you know, respect them as an individual and do your best to try to help them without crossing any kind of boundaries or going over the line with your responsibilities or prying into their life. You know, you don't want to have somebody that's prying into your life and the student's life and that sort of thing. But certainly just remember that, you know, all faculty go through these kinds of things, but then again, students go through these things too. And so we need to try to be as respectful as we can of the students and try to help them to the extent we can.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Rossi. I appreciate your time talking to me today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else. For more information, please visit our website at cat.xula.edu. That's cat.xula.edu. Until next time, this is Elizabeth Yost-Hammer.